Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Drs. Foss and Chagpar welcome Dr. Ted Sangeras. Dr. Sangeras is Associate Professor of Surgery and Surgical Oncology and Director of Outpatient Breast Services for the Smilow Cancer Hospital Network. Here's Francine Foss.
Would you like to start off by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
So I'm a surgeon. I've been doing this for a very, very long time. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, Baltimore area. My most recent place of employment was at Johns Hopkins, where I ran the breast program at Johns Hopkins. And so I've been here since July, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about the outpatient breast services at the Smilow Cancer Hospital Network? What is the network, and what exactly do you encompass within that program?
So I've been charged with the task of taking what we do so well here at the New Haven campus and seeing if we can get this into some of our satellite facilities and our care centers. I think geography has been one of the stumbling blocks to delivering breast care and actually cancer care in general. And I think the national trend is that we're trying to get cancer care out into the community so that it's accessible to all of our the population.
Yeah. So, Ted, you know, you and I have known each other for a good long while, and it was actually a real treat for me to recruit Ted to be part of our breast cancer team. But maybe tell people a little bit about some of the exciting things that you see on the horizon for breast cancer, not only here, but in our community, but even nationally.
So I think, again, I think the trend is, and a real emphasis from the National Cancer Institute, is that we do put breast cancer care out into the community so that people who might be discouraged based on their geographical location don't feel like they have to come to a major cancer center to get the kind of care that they would like to get. And so our obligation is to go out into the community. So I think the first goal and I think goal that we'd like to achieve is to deliver the care out into the community. We've got great innovations, as Anise has said, both in screening and in treatments and in research. And so making those available to the people out in the community is really what we'd like to see accomplished.
Can you speak a little bit about the populations that you're trying to reach? So maybe touching on some issues with respect to disparities, which is one thing that we're really trying to address now in cancer care.
So it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse when I keep talking about geography, but it's interesting. Geography really is, I think, the last significant cause of disparity. There was a very good recent article that was put out by the Center of Disease Control in their cancer prevention program, which actually looked about, let's say, screening, and that's what the study was about. And what was interesting is when they measured what we would typically consider the usual benchmarks of disparity, like race, ethnicity, and socioeconomics, geography, and really was one of the highlights in the stumbling block for getting a good screening and assumed good cancer care. And so it's very fascinating. So we're not targeting any one individual group or ethnicity. We're really targeting the geographical locations.
Yeah, because it sounds like, you know, you've got a population that's fairly well spread out.
Very well spread out.
And to try to make sure that the care that you get when you're in a very small center or a very small community is similar to what you'd receive at a state-of-the-art center. How are you going to do that, Ted?
So it's interesting because there's the implication, and we don't mean to imply that because, in fact, nothing could be farther from the truth. The state of Connecticut has outstanding healthcare providers and institutions. What we're trying to do is pull them together and share both ideas and resources. So I think that's really going to be the challenge, is to build relationships and then from those relationships implement systems. And when I say systems, I'm talking specifically about critical pathways so that patients get the same kind of care in their own backyard that they would if they had to travel 100 miles here to New Haven.
Ted, do you have any sense at all about how different the care is for, say, the common types of breast cancer around the state? Are there significant differences at this point, or are we talking about really just fine-tuning the existing standard care, which is the same everywhere?
Yeah, I think that's really what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to fine-tune the care. As I mentioned, I think there's great surgeons throughout the state. There's great medical oncologists, radiation oncology. We know that there's good imaging out in the community. But pulling them together so that they work as a cohesive, multidisciplinary group, I think, is going to be our real challenge. That's what really where breast cancer needs to be. And I think so that patients don't feel like they have a really great surgeon and 5 miles from their home, they have to go 20 miles to get a great radiation oncologist. And then if they're interested in participating, say, in a clinical trial, they feel like they have to go 75 miles to come down to, say, New Haven or one of the other institutions.
So talk a little bit about that, because I think that's a really great point about clinical trials and the fact that, you know, clinical trials seem to me to be something that's really driving care to be its very best. And so how is it that we can export clinical trials so that people are able to participate in their backyard?
So again, organizing the resources both in personnel and making available these very innovative clinical trials. Again, it's interesting that I think the days of these large multi-centered organizations, you're seeing that's becoming more of a burden financially and logistically. And so being able, say, for Smilo to have a very intriguing, very provocative clinical trial, and then making it available to our local care centers and our affiliates and our partners, I think is very exciting. And so, again, it's providing them with the opportunity to participate in those, and I think that's really where we're going to, so patients, again, have that access.
When you talk about clinical trials, we've heard a lot recently about some of these newer agents and some of these targeted therapies, and also about the application of molecular techniques to identify tumors and select specific therapies for specific patients. Now, that hasn't really made it into the community yet, so I'm wondering if that's something that you are aiming to do with this initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I think what you're going to find for not only breast cancer but other tumor sites is that we're going to capitalize on the similarities that all people have in any particular tumor site. So breast cancer certainly is one of those. But where we're going to really make the difference is exploiting the individual differences of a patient. So your breast cancer won't be the same as your sister's or your mother's or your neighbors. There will be some basic similarities, but exploiting those differences is where I think we're going to really see the benefit and get the most out of what we're doing.
Is that what people mean when they talk about personalized medicine?
Personalized treatment. Personalized medicine, I think, has a slightly different, for me at least, has a slightly different connotation, which implies that we're going to take the individual and address all of their needs, not just their disease, but their treatment, their socioeconomic issues, their, again, geographical issues. So these are all things that we're going to address. So that's personalizing the medicine to some degree. Personalizing treatment for me means the question that you brought up earlier, which is, you know, my breast cancer, it looks the same as everybody else's, you know, garden variety invasive breast cancer. But in fact, based on some of these clinical trials and the studies of the tissues, we know that there's something a little different about my breast cancer than yours, and that's what we're going to try to exploit.
So, Ted, will there be any way to uniformly analyze these tissues between the different care centers? Will there be a standard panel of, say, markers that are looked at? Will those tissues be reviewed among different institutions? How will that all work?
So I think, you know, though we try to make available all of the treatments, I think this is where this kind of model works so well, because what you want to do is you want to standardize this information. So I think having our care centers provide us with the opportunity to accrue patients, but funnel all of that information so that the analysis of that information is standardized here at SMILO, I think is going to be really key. So everything that happens out in the community from a research standpoint, the information comes here and we standardize it here.
Does a patient actually need to be on a clinical trial or sign a consent form in order to get their tissue analyzed in this way? Will there be anything that goes out into the community, say, informing patients that this is what's happening, and will they actually be in a clinical trial?
So the goal is to make available all clinical trials, including the analysis of tissue. But nothing can happen without the acknowledgement and the permission of the individual patient. So that's something that patients should always feel comfortable about. The treating physician should always feel comfortable about. This is not, this is mandated, this is appropriate, this is ethical. We're making available these opportunities, but it will be ultimately the physician and their patients who will ultimately decide whether they want to participate.
You know what I love about what you're talking about, Ted, in terms of getting out into the community and personalizing management from a geographical, socioeconomic, as well as a disease treatment basis, is that it really is all about the patient. Tell me a little bit more about community engagement and how we get people involved in understanding what's going on in cancer, and Breast Cancer Awareness Month is coming up just around the corner. How important is it that patients are engaged in this process?
I think it's really important. I think being knowledgeable, I often think of patients as being consumers, and being knowledgeable about what's available to them, both from a treatment standpoint and from a screening standpoint and et cetera, I think is really important. And so Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I know you know this as well as I do. It's a tiring month. It's the obligation, though, of healthcare providers and anyone involved in cancer, particularly breast cancer, during the month of October, to get out and do what they can to educate through lectures, through fundraising, so that patients and women in general are knowledgeable about what's out there.
So we want people to understand what's going on with their own bodies so that they can be part
Sure.
of that process.
They need to be part of the process.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute, but please stay tuned to learn more information about breast cancer screening, community outreach, and all of the exciting things that Dr. Ted Sangeras is bringing here to our community at Yale.
This year, over 200,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer, and in Connecticut alone, there will be over 2,000 new cases. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are related to smoking, and quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. An option for lung cancer patients in need of surgery at Yale Cancer Center is a video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery, also known as a VATS procedure, which is a minimally invasive technique. This has been a Medical Minute. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss, and our guest, Dr. Ted Sangeras. We're discussing breast cancer screening and community outreach, and Ted's our new director of the Outpatient Breast Cancer Network. Ted, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we were talking earlier before the break about all of the exciting things that are going on in terms of breast cancer and really getting out into the network to ensure that breast cancer patients get the same care as they would get anywhere. I think one of the things that we always think about in terms of breast cancer is screening and early detection. Do you want to talk about the importance of that and how you'll develop that in the network?
Well, again, there's this... Making available good quality screening is really important. What's interesting is it's already kind of out there. Again, coupling it with a multidisciplinary team and approach, I think, is going to be really important. And again, we've talked about this a lot, but geography is important. What else is important is as we get into this national debate about insurance. Is that probably the most significant issue when it comes to not having screening mammography or utilizing screening mammography is whether a patient or a woman is insured or uninsured. It trumps, believe it or not, ethnicity and race and even to a degree socioeconomic status. So it's a fascinating thing that we need to overcome. How the network can do or overcome insurance issues, I don't know, but we're certainly going to have to be watchful when we get again to this national debate of healthcare insurance.
Well, and I think that one thing that you've got in your corner at the network is the fact that the network does participate in a program that's available to all states in the union where uninsured women who are below 250% of poverty can actually get free screening. And if, unfortunately, God forbid, they're diagnosed with breast cancer, they're eligible for insurance through a state Medicaid program. And so the fact that you have this robust network, you'll be able to export that to your other sites, presumably, right?
That's certainly the hope. I agree.
Oh, Anise and Ted, both of you do breast cancer. And can you just refresh our audience for 1 minute about the current screening recommendations? You know, we hear about mammograms, we hear about the breast MRIs and other imaging studies. What are the current recommendations?
So, and we have not, as a medical profession, we've not done a great job of being as clear as we probably could be on that. It's sometimes a moving target, and it's cyclical depending on where the information comes from. But I would say that most recommend a baseline mammogram at the age of 40 and then every year thereafter. I think some of the issues of should you start a little early can be directed to your health care provider based on family history and prior history of your personal prior history. But I think I keep it simple, baseline at 40 and then every year thereafter. Some key points. I think quality digital mammography is absolutely a must. And then making sure that the people who are interpreting your mammogram are breast imagers by training and by dedication.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, one of the things that has happened in our field is that there have been so many wonderful, exciting advances in imaging, in surgery, in medical oncology, radiation oncology, plastics, you name it. You want to talk a little bit about some of the exciting advances that you've seen and where you think the field is going in the next 5 years or so?
I think, simply put, we're doing more by doing less. And that's a testament in many ways to quality screening, because when we find breast cancers earlier, we're able to get exceptional results. Women are living more now with breast cancer than they have ever in the past. And in doing so, we're doing less. We're doing less surgery. We're giving, in many cases, less medications. We're doing less radiation therapy. So this is all brought about because the engine which runs this progress is quality screening. I would say from a surgical standpoint, the most interesting and fascinating thing, again, is that we are doing less surgery and accomplishing the same results. Our breast conservation, meaning preserving the breast, removing the tumor, that has been a longstanding gold standard now. We are able to determine staging through the lymph nodes by doing less surgery, and in many cases, not even making an incision in the axilla or under the arm. Our reconstructive techniques, as you mentioned, Anise, are outstanding. We can take women who have been told they have breast cancer, and after all of the treatment is said and done, they can actually cosmetically look better than before they were diagnosed with breast cancer. It's truly remarkable. And from our standpoint as surgical oncologists, very exciting is the fact that our mastectomy is not your grandmother's mastectomy anymore. It is a highly sophisticated, highly effective, yet very much dedicated to preserving cosmesis. So I'm specifically speaking about skin-sparing mastectomies and, of course, nipple-sparing mastectomy, which I personally think is just a marvelous innovation and approach to mastectomies.
These newer techniques, Ted, are these available in across the state and all the different care centers, or are these special techniques, things that a woman would have to seek, say, a tertiary care facility to have?
Again, I think what's really important as a good consumer of your healthcare and of your upcoming surgery is to ask those same questions that you would ask anybody if you were going out to purchase a commodity, which is, you know, is this something you're good at? Is this something you do a lot of? Specifically, you're looking for a surgeon whose emphasis is breast surgery. There are certain things from a reconstructive standpoint that you may be required to come to a larger center. Some of the more sophisticated reconstructive techniques require special training, special equipment. They require special post-operative care. So in certain situations, I think you do have to go to a specialty hospital. But for the most part, it's just a matter of finding out if the surgeon's comfortable, if they do a lot of these procedures, what their success rate is, ask to see some results, ask to talk to patients. That kind of inquiry will hopefully get you into the right hands.
You know, Ted, one of the things that you said really intrigued me, and I think it is really important for our listeners to understand. You said we're seeing so many breast cancer patients, and a lot of women are living with breast cancer. Tell us a little bit about survival rates after breast cancer and how that's improved over time. Is it still the death sentence that so many patients think or thought that it was?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly the quote, Anise. Maybe you can remember, but I just recently saw more women are living with breast cancer than who are dying of breast cancer, obviously.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's really remarkable. No, it isn't a death sentence anymore. It's a disease like diabetes. It's a disease like high cholesterol. It's a disease that can be treated. It's a disease that you need to monitor and follow for many years. But we've gotten so good at treating early stage breast cancer now that, in fact, the old way of dealing with patients where, you know, you and your breast surgeon were married for life, that really doesn't happen anymore, because what's happening now is they're being successfully treated for their breast cancer, and more women still have to deal with the other issues of healthcare, like heart disease, which they're still more likely to to die of than breast disease. So it's really interesting.
And Ted, there's a big move to look at survivorship and have these survivorship clinics and try to address some of those long-term
Absolutely.
Issues after therapy. Is the survivorship program going to integrate with your community outreach program?
Yeah, I think part of what a good cancer program and a satellite program should encompass is what do we do with survivorship care? And again, why I think it's so important to treat patients initially as close to their home as possible is because eventually, as we pointed out, they are going to survive their breast cancer, and they need to be put back into the community where they're familiar with their other physicians who are going to take care of their heart disease and their diabetes and the other things that they need care for. So absolutely, we're hopeful that as we work on our policies for survivorship care, that we translate that back into the community.
So one of the things, you know, with women surviving longer with breast cancer, you know, tell us a little bit more about what that transition is like. So many women think that, you know, after breast cancer, I have to sit at home or be bound to bed. I mean, but other people say, no, get out there, be physically active, live your life. What's the right answer?
Well, I think, I think even as you're going through your treatment, most of us encourage you to get back in the saddle and as best you can, live your normal life, because the simple fact of the matter is there's studies to show that that's actually in your best interest, both emotionally and physically. And you are going to eventually get back into your normal life. I think survivorship is a little scary. There is this feeling that's very common to patients doing well, which is at some point we say you really don't need to come see us anymore, and there's this panic. And I have to say, it's not only on the patient's part. I think physicians have held on to this belief that patients need us for the rest of their life. And I sort of straddled the transition where I was raised and trained in the era where, the breast surgeons I knew and respected took care of their patients forever, but in reality, it's really not necessary. And I think there's that scary moment for both patient and physician when patients need to get back doing their normal life and really don't need to see their breast care specialist for the most part.
But then if they ever did.
If they ever did, of course, we're always available. And I think to some degree we do owe it to them and to the disease to make sure that the physicians and healthcare system that they are released into in the community is aware of some of the important things that need to be followed and looked after.
So, Ted, one of the other issues that a lot of women with breast cancer face is that there is a multitude of information out there on the internet, and there are all these kind of support groups and other political action groups that are trying to raise money for breast cancer. To what degree are those programs going to be integrated with your community outreach program, and how do you actually counsel women about looking at all that information that's out there?
Right. One of the strengths of SMILO here in New Haven is that a lot of the care and the information that's given to patients is really administered by advanced care practitioners. These are nurses, physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, who really their job, and they do it much better than physicians do it, I think, is that they provide patients with information and guidance on how they are to navigate through all of that information.
Dr. Ted Sangeras is Associate Professor of Surgery and Surgical Oncology and Director of Outpatient Breast Services for the SMILO Cancer Hospital Network. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.